Good evening, Eric Francis here, checking in on Thursday, the 5th of August, 2021. I was just given a video by a reader that has put all the pieces together for me and left me sitting here stunned, which is not easy after 18 nonstop months of going through all of this documentation and interviewing numerous people and learning things that I never really thought were going to be possible in American society, or for that matter, the world. However, here we are. This video is by someone that's a familiar face by now to most of you. His name is Rainer Fulmich, and he is an attorney admitted in Germany and in California who is a consumer fraud attorney. And he's been one of the most outspoken voices and also one of the most effective at delivering to us people with a message and a kind of consolidated documentation of what has been going on. Rainer Fulmich. And he is joined in this conversation by a man named Wolfgang Vodarg. I'm not sure I would get that exactly right, Vodarg in German. But I first encountered Wolfgang Vodarg early last year because his was the first video that I saw, explaining problems with the fraudulent way that the virus was claimed to exist. He was not a very articulate video presence. He is German. They tend to be reserved people. I've lived there and owed and loved many of them, and they don't like to be shoved into the spotlight. But he, in his somewhat awkward manner, put himself before a camera and explained exactly what went wrong and how we went from no virus to there being a kind of phantom virus in a matter of weeks. That's not what this video is about, not directly anyway. The speaker is a guy named Dr. Brian Artis, who I've not heard of until now, who puts together all of the pieces on what all those people died of in early 2020 and even well into 2020, but mostly early 2020, and notably mostly in New York, which, like 4/9/11, was the symbol of the crisis. When you explain to people that there is no virus, if you're sufficiently aware of the issues to understand that no virus has been isolated, sequenced, purified, therefore it has not been tested, therefore it could not be subjected to the gold standard, and therefore the polymerase chain reactions reference file, as we're now calling it, their reference, we're technically called a primer, is an in silico sequence. It's a computer-generated, like CGI, sequence. It's not a thing found in nature. When the PCR is a matching test, it can only find something that already exists. It can't find something that doesn't exist, unless it's wrong. And when you say any of this to people, they'll cock their hip and put stem with one arm akimbo and say, well, what did all those people die of anyway? And I say, well, there's a lot of possibilities. They all died in hospitals and care homes. I've never heard of one person who didn't die in a hospital or a care home, a nursing home in the United States, care home in the UK. Perhaps there were a few, but we don't really know what happened with them. The overwhelming majority were killed under medical supervision, on drugs, on vents, on wards. And there are a lot of other possibilities as well. There's the possibility of a hot batch of vaccines going out or being sent out. There is the possibility that people were poisoned. There is the possibility that they were sick with something else. 94% of the people who died, according to the CDC, were sick with between two and three other serious chronic illnesses, kind of diminutized as comorbidities, meaning causes of death, or in the language of death certificates, underlying causes of death. Okay, so they were already in very rough shape. However, what this discussion is about is how the people who died in 2020 were killed by an untested, unapproved, highly toxic drug called remdesivir, which the CDC, well, which Fauci, I don't know how he got that authority. He's the National Institutes of Health, and he's leader of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and has been for 35 years. How they got this authority, but that was the only treatment for anyone who was a presumed or confirmed COVID case, and it killed many, many people. Best to listen to it in the words of Dr. Brian Artis as he fills you in on all the background involving these drugs and the known studies about how toxic they are. I did not want to put this audio up without some introduction. The video is linked below. I personally think that it is better to listen to the audio of these kind of conversations and not be distracted by things like facial expressions and jumpy camera images and little things on the screen, or watch it once as video and listen once as audio and see if there is a difference. I can tell you as a student of the McLuhan family, there definitely is a difference, and you might want to check it out for yourself. In any event, this is a one-hour presentation. I can barely get up from my chair right now, but I'm going to try and get out of the house for a couple of hours. Anyway, I will catch you on Friday night's Planet Waves FM. That's the night of the 6th. An excellent special about the music of early Pink Floyd. Today is the anniversary of the release of their first album. Okay, without further delay, I'll leave you in the hands of Rainer Fulnick, Wolfgang Vodarg, and Dr. Brian Artis. Thanks for listening. Please pass this forward.
Dr. Artis, I'm sorry about the delay. This is Viviana was reading to us from very recent, actually brand new newspaper articles involving Charité Hospital, which is a major university hospital in this town here in Berlin. And there are what they call irregularities concerning billing practices at that hospital involving, among others, Professor Dr. Drosten, who is neither a real professor nor a real doctor, but he's the one who invented the so-called Drosten PCR test, on whose basis everything that's happening is founded, really, more or less. This is just to explain to you what she was reading. I have seen, and I think we have all seen, a number of videos with you, and the two most important, the two things that really jolted me out of my seat, more or less, is when you were speaking about remdesivir, and the other one is how the CDC, even before they started with these so-called vaccinations, knew everything about the so-called adverse events. Can you tell us, instead of me doing this, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yes. So I'm actually a holistic practitioner studying chiropractic, practicing chiropractic, acupuncture, and nutrition. I actually had set off to go to med school to help reverse my sister's autoimmune disease of lupus that she was diagnosed when she was 11. Only we learned early on in her diagnosis and prognosis that there was no known cure in conventional medicine. There was no known cause for this systemic lupus erythematosus. There was only these three drug treatments, and these three drug treatments were actually going to end her life within a three-decade period is what we were told. She was only 11 at the time. Then they told us also she would never be able to bear children because the drugs were going to have side effects of stillbirths and birth defects. So I knew the medical model wasn't going to help me figure out what happened to my sister. So I set off to go learn everything I could about how do you analyze what causes disease in the body? How do you remove those causes of disease? And then how do you actually heal the human body? So for the last 20 years, I've had practices in both Tennessee and in Dallas, Texas, where we treated thousands of people from all around the world, 16 different countries, to actually help them uncover why it is they were diagnosed with medical conditions and then help them over months to years to reverse those. So I specialized in, it was really a nutritional practice, detoxing, removing infections, and then actually healing the body through herbal means, dietary means. That's basically my...
So that, you know what?
Just this, ask one question. So yeah. How's your, just a few curiosity, were you able to help your sister?
Yeah, 12 years later, she actually got married. And she actually got impressions that I was to heal her and started having visions and dreams and prayers answered that she was going to have children. Well, I just want you to know she's now 34 years old and just had her fourth child last October. And she has been no lupus for the last 10 years, which is fabulous.
Congratulations.
And in just in case you want to know, systemic lupus erythematosus, for anybody that's watching this, you guys need to actually make sure any rheumatologist is looking for parasite infections in their spleen organ. Once you find that and remove the parasites, it doesn't matter if it's tapeworms, roundworms, flukes, or protozoa. When you eliminate that, which only takes a few months, all of the body pain, all of the rashes that occur with systemic lupus will disappear. It's been a great disinformation and cover up medically for years.
This is extremely interesting. I don't know if you're aware of this, James Corbett. He's originally from Canada, but he's been living in Japan, I think, since 2004 because he's married to a Japanese woman. He's one of the best investigative journalists. And we've had him here. We interviewed him. And I don't know if you've seen his two videos. One is called How Big Oil Conquered the World, and the other one is called Why Big Oil Conquered the World. And it describes in detail how at the start of the last century, some very rich people decided to go from oil into healthcare, and how they founded the pharmaceutical industry in order to get rid of holistic medicine, which was up until then working fine. So you have more or less been in the business of turning this around, it seems to me.
Oh, yeah, for the last 20 years. Mm. And the most disgusting thing around remdesivir, which this has been the first thing I brought out in media back in May 2020, is when Anthony Fauci put on the National Institutes of Health's website what the treatment protocol for COVID-19 hospitalized patients was going to be. I was just curious because I heard in the media that within the third day, these New York doctors that were being flooded with COVID-19 patients, they were reporting by the day three and day five, they were experiencing what they had never seen before from a viral infection. They all reported that there was acute kidney failure within 3 to 4 days of treatment. And they have never seen, this was their words, we've never seen a virus do this to the kidneys. Well, the truth is, it's because the virus has never done that to the kidneys, and it was never the kidneys anyway. So when I heard this in the media, I wanted to know, well, what are they doing to these patients? Just 3 months earlier, my father-in-law was killed by medical protocols in a Dallas, Texas hospital. They literally used vancomycin, which is an antibiotic. It shut down his kidneys within 24 hours. By day three, they told us he was an acute kidney failure. By day five, he had so much water retention on his brain, he was going unconscious. By day nine, they had killed him. Now, vancomycin, the antibiotic, has a known side effect of acute kidney failure. And I don't know if anybody in here knows this, but they had diagnosed him with the flu in early February. Now, why would you ever use an antibiotic to treat a viral infection? It's not conducive. It's not safe or effective. The CDC actually warns against it. But vancomycin has acute kidney failure as a side effect. Well, when I actually... You let me know when you're ready to translate. I don't want to get too far ahead, yeah, but you let me know when you want me to stop.
Hold on 1 second, because there's, I don't know if you're aware of this, but our chief medical advisor, I guess we can call him, he's the one who really got this corona committee started. Dr. Vodak is with us. So he may ask some questions, which we can't ask because we're no experts. We're only lawyers. We're always dependent on people like you and Dr. Vodak and the others. So that killed your father-in-law, and that's what got your attention when you heard that they're using remdesivir in New York, right?
Yeah, what got my attention was the New York doctors were reporting, when we're treating this new coronavirus, we're seeing that within 3 to 5 days, we're seeing acute kidney failure.
Yeah.
Because the virus, we assume, is attacking the kidneys,
yeah.
Which I knew right away that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. So I actually wanted to know, are they using vancomycin on these people also? Because uh-huh. This is a virus just like the flu. So I went on to CDC's website to find out what are they actually treating COVID patients with. And the CDC refers you to the National Institutes of Health website for the treatment protocol of COVID-19. And this is when the storm happened for me. Mm-hmm. When I opened the website, Anthony Fauci was declaring that there's this new drug that is mandated in all hospitals and used by all medical doctors in America called remdesivir, and it is the only treatment to be used in all hospitals in America.
Whoa.
And then it said you cannot use hydroxychloroquine. It's proven to be dangerous for COVID-19 patients. And you can't use chloroquine. Now, I have reviewed drugs that patients have been on for the last 20 years. I had never heard of remdesivir. So I went to the FDA's website to find out any information about remdesivir, only to find out remdesivir was never FDA approved to be safe or efficacious for any disease. But on the NIH's website, Anthony Fauci said, every doctor in the country has to use remdesivir only. And there's these two research studies that prove remdesivir is efficacious and warranted during this novel coronavirus. The first study quoted on the website was the Ebola trials on 4 experimental drugs in 2018. And then there was a second study, which was a study, it's called a cohort study, which was actually sponsored by Gilead, the manufacturer of remdesivir, in March 2020. And they had 53 COVID-19 patients from 3 countries, Japan, Canada, and America, that they gave remdesivir for 28 days. Now, there was 2 links on the National Institutes of Health website that Anthony Fauci was quoting. All I did was click the first one. I wanted to see this research study on the Ebola virus that warranted now Fauci saying, we're going to use this non-FDA approved drug because of this research study on Ebola. When I clicked the link, and anyone can go to it now, in that study, there was 4 drugs, remdesivir, and National Institutes of Health experimental drug that Fauci put in, not remdesivir, but a second one, and then 2 other experimental antibodies. In the study, at 6 months of this 1-year study, the safety board for the study found remdesivir had the highest death rate of all 4 experimental drugs and pulled the drug from the study. It didn't even make it to the end of the study because it was so deadly. They also pulled Anthony Fauci's experimental drug he put in the trial because it was the second most deadly. So did Anthony Fauci know about remdesivir's death? Oh, you better believe it. And now he was going to push this on the masses? Well, the second study that he quoted on NIH's website, which was the cohort study by Gilead, it actually published its findings within 28 days of giving these 53 COVID-19 patients from 3 countries, they figured out what the side effects were. 22% of all 53 patients that had COVID-19 experienced these 4 lethal side effects: multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension. 8% of them had to be taken off the drug on day 5 or 10 because they were dying from the poison of the drug's effects on multiple organs. So 30% of these individuals experienced 4 life-threatening side effects of the drugs. Now, acute kidney failure was the one that caught my attention. What were the medical doctors in New York saying in the media? We've never seen a virus do this before, but when we start treatment, we're seeing a virus attack the kidneys and cause acute kidney failure. Not only in New York are we struggling to find ventilators, we don't have enough dialysis machines. Well, I knew right away it was remdesivir poisoning. Anthony Fauci knew it was deadly because the actual research study he was quoting, I could not believe that no one clicked the link to go look at the study to see, well, what were the results of the study with remdesivir on Ebola virus patients that warrants now Fauci saying you got to give it to coronavirus patients. Anyway, it was disgusting. And immediately I had to contact the media and actually tell the world what was obviously printed in these research studies. It was never proven safe. It was never proven effective. And then I learned America was the only country from January 2020 until October 2020 to treat all COVID patients with remdesivir. Our country bought up all of remdesivir reserves, and we were the only country that used it for the whole first 10 months of 2020. And which country in the world had the most deaths in the entire world? The United States of America. Do you want to know why? They poisoned them all to death with remdesivir.
Holy shit.
I called it Fauci's genocide. He knew it beforehand. He knew it for 2 years before he mandated this drug, that it was deadly.
So this, from when is this recommendation that Fauci gave? Is that in February? So this was immediately when it started, this is what they gave them. This was the hydroxychloroquine that popped up later. Is that right? The idea to use...
It was both. Yeah. Both drugs were used in the wrong way. And I think there are two things you have to have in mind. First, the diagnosis may be wrong. And second, the therapy may be wrong. And I think both things are where we have to consider here, because the diagnosis was made with a test. And now we know the CDC... It's just saying that with the test is not sure, the results are not sure, maybe you also find influenza with the test, because the influenza has vanished and only COVID-19 was there suddenly. So they start to kit the test now, and they start to find some multiplex tests to have a more differentiated diagnosis. So the diagnosis, we don't know which diagnosis we had. Everyone was thinking of COVID-19. They made this Drosten test, and they found out it was positive, and then it was COVID-19. And they treated like Mr. Fauci said. And it's very correct that those drugs, like remdesivir and like hydroxychloroquine, in this doses, were never agreed to be antiviral therapy. And it was just that they made a panic, and with the background of this panic, they were succeeded to tell us that there is some emergency possibility. And they gave us those drugs, those experimental drugs. They wanted to sell already for years remdesivir. They always tried remdesivir with Ebola, with others. They tried to market this stuff where they had the patent, where they wanted to produce and wanted to sell it. And it was very dangerous in Ebola. This is right. And when it's dangerous in Ebola, it has nothing to do with the Ebola virus. It just has to do with remdesivir. So if you give remdesivir to a healthy person, he will also be damaged. So this is we have to distinguish the viral disease. Which one was it? We don't know exactly. We only know the test was positive. And the second is there were drugs given, like remdesivir, which were very toxic and did not help in any way to treat this disease. And Mr. Fauci could not know that there is some positive effect, but maybe he knew that there is a negative effect. And for sure he knew that hydroxychloroquine in a dose which was tenfold more than you normally used, and that this would be toxic for many people. It would be toxic for normal people because of the heart, of the effects on the heart, And it would be toxic also to people with a certain, with a favism defect, with this enzyme defect, where they would get hemolysis in this doses. So it seems to me, I'd say this, we have to find out whether there was a, there was a strategy to produce victims of so-called COVID-19 pandemic. And they produced those victims successfully in New York, for instance, with the, with treating the people in a wrong way. There were many victims of this false treatment, for sure. And there were many victims also when they gave it to very old people in many countries, and when they gave it, when they put them to ventilators when it was not necessary. So they used many, many wrong things, where the diagnosis was not sure, but they used the wrong things just to produce victims we could be afraid of. And they said, this is COVID-19, they all die, but they killed them. And this, we have to examine this, and we have to yes, we there should be courts. I think this is something like genocide. I think we have to go after it very seriously.
I have to ask again, Brian, that the you're mentioning 40% suffered these side effects. What, which, and that's four side effects. I forgot to write them down. I know that one of them was acute kidney failure. What were the other ones?
So 22% of the cohort study participants suffered multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension.
Okay.
8% taken off within 10 days because they were dying from the drug. So it's a total of 30%.
By the way, those are the symptoms that they're explaining in the context of COVID as well.
No kidding.
Same exact symptoms.
That's severe poisoning for a lot of them. I'm telling you. What was disgusting, too, was I was watching on the World Meter in June 2020. Mm-hmm. They were keeping track of how many cases of COVID were diagnosed in each country and how many deaths in each country there were. That 8% in that cohort study, the 8% that had to be taken off the drug because they were dying within 10 days. The World Meter for the United States in June 2020, right when I opened it, death of all those treated for COVID-19 was exactly 8%. And I was like, and it was the only drug allowed to be treated for COVID-19 hospitalized patients.
But that's a huge scandal. I mean, this is big.
This is exactly what was happening. Mm-hmm. They were shutting down the kidneys of these patients with remdesivir. Mm-hmm. And then their body, when the kidneys can no longer remove water, their body accumulates water into their abdominal cavity. Then it will actually saturate their lungs. And these medical doctors in these hospitals are looking at chest x-rays, saying that it's secondary pneumonia. It's not secondary pneumonia. It's pulmonary edema. You are drowning these people with their own water. You are filling their lungs with water, and they are drowning to death. This is exactly what happened to my father-in-law. It's exactly what they're reporting still to this day, the side effects of individuals with COVID-19 in hospitals. Now, it's the same thing. You're shutting down their kidneys with a poison, and their body's retaining all the fluid you're pumping into them through an IV. It's just what's happening. It's disgusting and immoral.
I mean, isn't there in medicine a principle called Occam's razor? Like, if you experience, oh, there is kidney failure, and this patient is here for treatment for respiratory virus, shouldn't your first instinct be this cannot have something to do with the respiratory virus? It must have a different source. Shouldn't that be the, yeah, the standard procedure?
Standard procedure should be medical doctors should be better trained at evaluating what pneumonia looks like in the lungs under x-ray. And what water looks like in the lungs. They are not the same. One looks like a cauliflower appearance in the x-rays. That's pneumonia. And then the pulmonary edema looks like a straight line of water. Opacity in the lungs. That's exactly what it looks like. The MDs that were treating my father-in-law on day six, I said, show me the pneumonia x-rays. He pointed at it. And he goes, there's the pneumonia. And I said, where? And he goes, right there. And I said, that's not pneumonia. That's actually water. That's pulmonary edema. And then I said, when's the last day you put him on Lasix, which is a diuretic? And he said, oh, we're doing it every day. I had him review the medicine schedule with me. He had only done it once in 6 days, 20 milligrams, and had no idea they had done it the last 3 days. I made them put him on Lasix. Oh, within 4 hours, he lost 20 pounds of water. And the respiratory therapist for the first time confirmed all the water in his lungs that they had misdiagnosed as pneumonia was completely gone. And they were able to take him off of forced oxygen they had him on for 4 days. This is what they're doing in the hospitals. The hospital that my father-in-law was being treated with, they stood behind their protocols. That night when we left after they put him on Lasix for 4 hours and his breathing improved, the hospital administrators called my wife's family and said, we are taking him off the Lasix now permanently.
So normally, if you have an edema in the lungs, it's the right heart which is insufficiently pumping. So there is a failure of the right heart, and the right heart is pumping through the blood through the lungs. And if there is a big resistance in the lungs, yeah, the right heart gets weakened. Or you can have lots of water. You can have lots of water when you have a kidney failure, and then it's the amount of water in the body. But I wonder when there's a kidney failure, mostly Lasix doesn't help so much. You have to go to the dialysis and to get the water out. And I wonder, it's very difficult to distinguish the many possible reasons why such things happen. But the timely connection between taking a new drug and then the symptoms starting, this makes me think, yes, we should really consider all those cases and find out how is the pattern mechanism, how is it really working, and it's very clear that the drug remdesivir has no indication for virus diseases. Up to now, we don't know any positive effect of this drug. We only know toxic effects. So this was for sure a wrong decision to give it to so many patients with a positive PCR test, which is very, very, it's criminal what happened.
And can I ask you was there like in the second study that you mentioned, the one where they took the patients from China and Japan and US and Europe or whatever, these 53 patients, was there also a control group or was it just observing these 53 patients?
It was just those 53 patients, and it was only treating those 53 patients with remdesivir. What was odd to me was they used that study and the Ebola study, Fauci quoted as the evidence behind why we are going to use this drug on all Americans. Like, it made no sense to me. He knew the Ebola study was a failure for remdesivir. Mm-hmm. He knew it didn't even make it to the end of the study. Why did he put it in there? It's just barbaric and it's evil to me. The PCR test, I love that you keep bringing that up. Thank you very much. The actual CDC pushed out papers to every hospital and medical facility in the United States in March 2020 and gave them new guidelines of how to diagnose this new COVID-19 for cases of COVID-19. They actually put in writing, if you find in your clinics or in your hospitals that a patient appears with flu-like symptoms and they test positive for influenza A or B, but test negative for pneumonia, and you do the PCR test and it's negative for COVID, you can ask the patient what city they live in. And if that city has any positive COVID cases, you can list this person as a positive COVID-19 case, mm-hmm. and we will pay you 20% more for every Medicare patient.
Yeah.
Versus a flu diagnosis.
I have to.
Wolfgang, please repeat that. That's not just disturbing. That's criminal.
That's a giant Ponzi.
No, this is how they exaggerated all cases.
Holy.
Yeah. So you can go to. You have to write this down. Go to rens-law.com. Thomas Renz is who is suing the Department of Health and Human Services over the CDC exaggerating cases for COVID-19 and then allowing for the first time ever creating a new code for cause of death of COVID-19 in 2020? Not only did the CDC allow them to exaggerate and put positive COVID-19 cases as the cause of illness when it was never even tested positive, even with a PCR test, which is super inaccurate, but they allowed for the first time ever also in this lawsuit, you can read the law documents, which the CDC documents are in there. They actually published a new diagnosis death, cause of death code U70.1, or it might be used.
It's the WHO ECD code. There were two new ones. There were two new ones, and one was when the test is positive, and the other was when you have symptoms and you had contact with someone. This is why I said if a hospital has a nurse which runs through all the rooms and through all the and is positive, all the patients in the hospital could be charged as COVID-19 patients. So it was ridiculous, this diagnosis the WHO allowed the hospitals to use. These were incentives which were not okay. But I have to correct myself. I was speaking about the water in the body, and you know you have the circulation is like an eight, and the heart is in the center. So the blood goes through the lung and comes from the body, goes through the lung, gets oxygen, then goes to the left atrium, goes to the left side of the heart and is pumped through the body again. So it's like an eight. And if there is a heart failure, the water always is there, is in front of the pump. So when you have a whole heart is a failure, you have a low pressure. And you have maybe water in the lungs and in the body. And if you have a failure of the right heart, you have the water in the body. You have it, for instance, in the stomach and the legs and so on, the swollen legs and such things. If you have a failure of the left heart, you have an edema in the lungs. And this is what you meant with the X-ray. This is the differential diagnosis between pneumonia and edema. There are certain signs in X-ray where you can distinguish this. But if you have a good X-ray, you can very well distinguish this. But there are other possibilities to distinguish this. Your laboratory data you can use to distinguish this. It's not so difficult to distinguish this. Thank you. I'm sorry, I had to correct it a little bit. It was not the very correct picture I gave it the first time.
Sagt er, das ist barbarisch, das ist böse, barbaric and evil. I think I'm absolutely speechless, Brian. This is... did anybody react to this? I mean, was there any DA in the country who said, well, I'm going to have to look into this, or has nothing happened thus far?
There have been multiple lawsuits against the Department of Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you want to get into this now, but there's been injunctions filed in federal court. They've chosen Northern Alabama to target the district court there, which is a federal court. If it gets listened to or heard there, it spreads throughout all 50 states nationwide. But there's been filed several injunctions to stop the emergency use authorization of vaccinating these children. This is really primarily around the vaccines and around the CDC's exaggeration of COVID cases, how they did it, and then around the plausible causes of COVID deaths and the actual confirmed COVID-19 deaths, the mixture of the two being allowed to have one diagnosis code for the first time ever, which was to exaggerate COVID deaths. So those have been filed in court. I'm sure you want to get into the FDA documents too, but all of this is very disturbing. And we've got a group of lawyers at the American Frontline Doctors. We also have lawyers that are with myfreedoctor.com. who are all together working to defend as many people as possible against the onslaught of really senseless murder, to me, in my mind.
Well, the thing is, Brian, we're in touch with all of them. We interviewed Dr. Simone Gold. Tom Renz has been with us a couple of times. I know that he filed that complaint. I'm in constant touch with him. And Anna Garner, of course, who's also part of the team. I think this must... The world must know what's going on there. The United States, of course, but the entire world must know what's going on, because this is a lockstep approach. That's what they call it. And they're killing people right now.
And there's a huge amount of censorship against everyone, yep. all medical doctors, all attorneys speaking the truth. It doesn't matter. They just continue to censor it. And there's a lot of us that are very concerned, but are still going to push forward and try to tell the world what's going on, because it's very obvious to many of us what's going on.
Yeah.
And we definitely don't want this being projected onto our children. I mean, the children are coming up here at school in the fall, and they're trying to push this on all five-year-old children coming. So the second thing I brought to light was I couldn't stand the fact that the FDA had an internal discussion in a meeting in October 2020. It was dated October 22nd, 2020. Not only was remdesivir being thrown onto all the American public, untested, unapproved, not safe or effective, never successful as an antiviral of any kind. Not only is that occurring on the masses here in America, but then they're going to release these vaccines. And the FDA had this internal meeting by the CBER, the Center for Biologics, Experiments, and Research. And they presented to all the FDA heads a 25-slide presentation 2 months before the shots ever came out in December. And there's a slide 16 where they informed the FDA of the side effects, the serious adverse events they knew were going to start being reported to the FDA once these shots came out. And this slide they passed over real quick in the presentation, but the actual 25-slide presentation stayed on the FDA's website. Of course, I got a copy of that and went immediately into the media to let everybody know that the FDA is aware that there's over 110 diseases that are going to be caused by these shots that will start being reported into the government as side effects from the shots, including death and miscarriages of pregnant women. This was on that document. This is not the only things that were on the document. There were also five different blood clotting disorders that they knew in October were going to start being reported when the COVID shots started being administered to all Americans. And these have now come May and June of this year. We're talking 5 and 6 months later after the shots came out. Now you're seeing they're putting a black box warning on the label for Johnson & Johnson for blood clots, myocarditis. The FDA already knew this in October, 2 months before the shots ever came out. So I immediately went into the media to let everybody know these are the things the FDA know is coming. And I needed to alert everybody as much as possible. So I've nonstop been educating people on what they know is coming. Now what you're seeing evidence is being reported in the different government agencies that receive reporting in America. There's 11 of them. So there's just tons of reports of these tragic disease states, death side effects, of course, being reported, miscarriages. But they all knew it since October 22nd. It's actually dated October 22nd, 2020.
They knew it all, and they didn't do a thing.
I don't know if you've had Thomas Renz on since the last lawsuit. Have you had him on since July 19th?
No, we're going to have him on at least one more time. I'm in touch with him constantly, but we haven't had him on our Corona committee since then. So it's high time, I guess.
He's a dear friend of mine. I was on the phone with him again last night, but very close friend.
Yeah.
But this actual lawsuit that just was filed on July 19th against the federal government was an injunction to stop the emergency use authorization of the vaccines.
Yeah.
Because one of the reporting systems is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. There was a whistleblower who came forward and said her statistical review of the data just in CMS.
Mm-hmm.
This is important. Just inside of CMS shows the numbers of death from the day of shots received and 3 days post-vaccine, there's already 45,000 at least deaths within that database alone. And they have not extended the search out yet to 4 days post-vaccine, 5 days post-vaccine, but they're going to do it. That's what this actual lawsuit is about. Now, the important thing about that is, I just want you guys to understand this. In the FDA document in October, they actually stated that they were going to be doing a rapid assessment of reporting coming in from injuries from the vaccines. And they were going to be using this, and they stated in that FDA document, we're going to be trusting the CMS data to give us the best information that we can relate to the American public on these vaccines being safe and effective. Do you know which system that was? The CMS system. And no one has ever talked about the fact that 45,000 are dead within the first 3 days reported into Medicare, which are the older, typically older generations in America, and Medicaid, which are the impoverished individuals in America. That's just that one out of 11 reporting system. VAERS has over 12,000, which is the reporting system into the Department of Health and Human Services. This whistleblower said all the numbers being reported are off by a factor of five. She's a mathematician, 25 years of doing algorithms and health databases. She said it's off by a factor of five. Well, I'm sure you guys have interviewed other people, but Dr. Zelenko, Dr. McCullough, they're all convinced it's off by 10 or even 100 times. Oh. Okay, but, one of the things that I wanted to make sure people knew, these reporting systems, Harvard, the University of Harvard in 2010 did a review of all reporting systems on vaccine injuries into the United States government agencies. After a three-year review, they found it's less than 1%. I hear people in the media saying, other doctors saying, it's upwards of 10% or less. No, it's not. The actual number is in the document from Harvard Pilgrim. It's less than 1% of all reported. So it doesn't matter what number you hear reported on deaths. It doesn't matter how many miscarriages. It doesn't matter how many demyelinating diseases or autoimmune diseases or Guillain-Barré syndrome or how many hundreds now of Bell's palsy that's been reported. You can add two zeros to every one of those numbers to get close to what Harvard says is the accurate data.
Yeah, but I mean, I said this before because we were talking about the same similar topic, you know, in like few hours earlier, with this corona. I mean, this the vaccine. We don't know if it's exactly the same percentage, you know, because it could be that people, because they feel that they're doing something so valuable for society, might report less, even less of the side effects, you know, because they don't want to. They think, oh, if I report it, then maybe they're going to stop the vaccination. I believe it's so important that everyone gets vaccinated. So this could be like a motive. Or you could have the other side that people over-report for some reason. So we don't know if it's exactly would be this 1%, but it's still, I mean, what's clear, I mean, that it's much less, you know, than what's really going on that's been reported, because we've also had a lot of, you know, incidents, like, for instance, in this, like, old people's home here in Berlin, where, like, out of 30 people vaccinated, 8 died, and that was never reported. So we know that already, I mean, died, like, shortly after vaccination. So, I just wanted to mention that, because it's still, some sort of, insecurity involved with that statement, but still we know it's much, much, much less reported than that's what's going on.
That's very good. And I will share also, did you see that document from Harvard? They actually state the number one cause why it's underreported so much. The number one reason was medical professionals didn't know anything about the system.
Wow. Huh. Huh.
That's number one. Number two was, if they wrote it down in their records, the doctor would have to go onto the VAERS data system and actually report it a second time, and it got in the way of the workflow experience in the office for the doctors. When Harvard approached the CDC at the end of 3 years, they asked them to help them, or allow Harvard to help develop a better system of reporting. The CDC took the consultants away from the Harvard review study and told them no more that we're going to assist Harvard at all with that actual initiative. So there's been no change ever since then. And I will say, you guys have had some American frontline doctors on there. Dr. Lee Merritt, I was interviewing her one day, and Dr. Lee Merritt said that it was very obvious that a patient who just received a vaccine, a teenager, immediately went into Guillain-Barré syndrome. And she looked at the doctor who was actually trying to get her up on the gurney, and this doctor is the one who was treating this patient, and she said, when did she receive her vaccine? It was just an hour earlier. And she said, this is Guillain-Barré syndrome. This is the first listed side effect on that FDA slide, by the way, in October, Guillain-Barré syndrome. And she looked at the doctor, who's a colleague of hers, and said, are you going to report this to VARS? His response was, "What's VARS?" So, yes, there is a huge amount of underreporting for sure. I would suspect for sure, based on this whistleblower coming out, that Thomas Renz has filed this on behalf of the American Frontline Doctors, that when it's a factor of 5, you have to estimate it's at least a 10. But for sure, the actual numbers are 45,000 just within 3 days of getting the shots.
So there, I just spoke about the incentives for doctors to tell something or not to tell it. And it depends on what they charge for it. And it depends whether they feel they have made a mistake, and then they wouldn't say it. So if they give a vaccination, they would not like to tell it so much to anybody if something happens. So there are such problems which distort the whole statistics, and we have to have this in mind. And I'm very sure that we have much more side effects with this so-called vaccination than we have in the numbers and in the statistics of all administrations.
But Wolfgang, in Germany, it wouldn't be just the doctor who does the vaccination who would need to report this. But I mean, if a doctor has a patient that, you know, just what we heard earlier from the dentist. So if someone comes to the doctor and say, "Well, I had a rash, or like I have a headache," yes, or something, and then the new doctor or like his regular doctor, if the vaccination was done, for instance, in one of these vaccination centers, then he would say, "I have to have, you know, did this vaccination and now I feel sick 7 days later, I can't move my leg anymore," or something like that.
Yes.
Then this doctor would also need to report, in fact.
Yes, that's right. He is obliged to report, but
if they don't know about the reporting system, they can't report.
The reporting system is sometimes a little bit complicated, and it makes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And the next patient is waiting.
Yeah.
Jetzt aber, da wir ja einen Gast haben, wollten wir ja möglichst keine Selbstgespräche führen. Brian, I'm sorry about the interruption. You were going to say something when we interrupted you.
Yes, I am, and I want everybody in the world to listen to this. On the FDA slide 16 in October 2020, there is a side effect listed on there. It is called multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. It's abbreviated MIS-C. This is a brand new disease that's only been ever created and given a diagnostic code since 2020. Now, we all know that COVID was very little threat to, or SARS-CoV-2 was very little threat to children, also to pregnant women, we already knew. But there were very rare occurrences where the spike proteins of the coronavirus could create this multi-inflammatory syndrome in children. Now, it's a known side effect of the vaccine. The FDA knew it. By definition, if you look up the Mayo Clinic's definition of what multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children is, it is a severe inflammation of multiple organs in the body, including the brain, the kidneys, the spleen, the gastrointestinal tract, the eyes, the skin. This is all a part of that. If you look up complications on their definition of this actual syndrome, it can be deadly. Now, in VAERS, I have not seen a single one of these reported into VAERS, but if you go to cdc.gov, there's already reported since the shots have started. There's already been over 4,200 reported to the CDC occurrences of multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, and already over 40 deaths of children reported to the CDC. And this is what you want to push on all the masses of children in America and across the world to allow them to go to school. I find this just atrocious and disgusting. And everyone needs to know this is a known side effect, because the mRNA, the spike proteins in the shots, and anything else that might be in those shots, are going to cause this debilitating, horrible reaction of inflammation in multiple organs at one time in the body of children.
What is it called again? Multisystem inflammatory. What else?
Syndrome.
Oh.
In children. In children. So it's abbreviated MIS-C.
Okay, and this has this is brand new. This has never been known before. Is that it?
That has never been known until the year 2020.
Also das müssen wir übersetzen.
Eine Sekunde nochmal. So is this, what's defined as a child? Like how old can you be to be affected by this counted?
All of these are listed younger than 12 years old.
12 years. So how many people in the US are already, how many kids are already vaccinated when you say it's like already 4,000 cases?
400.
400 reported? How many people might be?
It's already over 4,000 reported cases.
4,000.
So there have been trials by like Stanford. Stanford was setting up a study a few months ago to allow vaccinations of 6 months old, 2 years old. So you're seeing some of these being given to children and pushed out to children. So these are actually already starting to be corresponded. Also, you're going to see what I'm sure Wolfgang could talk about, transmission shedding from the actual vaccinated to the children of the unvaccinated. Or sorry, the children of the vaccinated. You're seeing reports it all started spiking. You can actually look on cdc.gov. The spike for MIS-C starts in December, spikes in January, and it continues to go up. You can see it right there on cdc.gov, which is right when all the vaccines started of adults.
So this syndrome is not only going to come up when you vaccinate children, or like you said, I mean, that's not children, that's toddlers and,
oh, yeah,
and babies.
Oh, yeah, you're going to... Oh, there's actually toddlers. There's two-year-olds who are already menstruating blood clots few hours within their actual parents being vaccinated. This is already being reported in 2 years old, 4 years old, 6 year old daughters and girls. This is the attempt of those female bodies to remove the toxic effects they're being exposed to by their vaccinated parents or yeah, whoever they're around.
That's what I was getting at. It's not
transmission for sure.
It's a danger that comes from the shedding from the vaccinated parents.
Oh yeah. I call it transmission. You can call it shedding. But when you put in 50 billion particles of mRNA, you're going to get 50 billion spike proteins. You're going to get more than that antibodies. And the human body is going to start to shed these things. You're either going to transmit it through coughing, through sweating, through urine, through semen. You have to excrete it out of your body. This is not healthy. It's an overabundance of immune reactions. So the body's going to try to shed the spike proteins. It's going to try to shed the antibodies. And we already know how detrimental these antibodies are. The antibodies by themselves have already been proven with the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca shot. Those actual antibodies against double-stranded DNA, which is what's in those shots, the transgene, we already know they cause systemic lupus erythematosus, which I referenced earlier. You're going to see autoimmune diseases come from the shots. You're going to see them from shedding the antibodies and the spike proteins in other people. It's just a horrible thing.
Just for my understanding, they knew before anything happened, they knew that this was going to happen.
Oh, they knew it. It's in the FDA documents, and the FDA logo's on every slide, just so you know.
Das muss übersetzt werden. Let me translate this. I'm pretty sure that most Americans, I know that the rest of the world doesn't know anything about this, but I, you know, when I decided that we need to hear you, we need to hear what you have to tell us, I braced myself for the worst, but this is worse than anything that I've expected. We've got to get this out into the open. We've got to expose all of this. You're muted.
A couple things are phenomenal. You do an incredible job of translating that into German. I don't know how you do that. That's phenomenal. That's number one. You're incredible at doing that. And number two, I've got five kids, and I would never want any of these possible serious side effects that are permanent and lifelong to ever occur to my child. And no one should ever push something so experimental ever on any human being ever. It's by far crimes against all humanity, but my goal is to try to preserve as much as possible the health of every child, period. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see, it's just going to be horrible what's going on right now. I can't stand it. It drives me crazy, and I just want to inform as many people as possible of what we know. Because when we came out in October and let everybody know about this actual FDA document, myocarditis was listed as one of the known side effects. Now, what are you hearing reported in all the teenagers that are now being given the shots? You're hearing hundreds and thousands of reports of myocarditis, and some of these athletes and teenagers are dying in high school ages. But the FDA already knew this. What's incredible to me, the FDA said this week, because of the concerns about myocarditis in children, before they start putting this into all children in America, we want Pfizer, literally, we want Pfizer to expand how many children they put in the trial.
Wow.
Why would you want to give any more children a shot that's already causing myocarditis, whether it's in a trial of any kind or to the masses? Why would you encourage any more children or risk their life or health over an experimental shot? It makes no sense to me. I find it deplorable.
It's very hard to believe all this. It will have an effect, I'm very sure, because exposing these things is so important. It's the most important thing we can do right now. It's the lawsuits plus educating people, transparency, shining a light, a bright light. My legal hero is Justice Louis Brandeis, and he said sunlight is the best of disinfectants, and that's true. It is just incredible to hear this, but we're going to do our best to let as many people know this as possible.
Wonderful. And also, all pregnant women need to beware. There is polyethylene glycol 2000 in the Pfizer and Moderna shots. There is polysorbate 80 in the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca shots. There's graphene oxide that's been determined to be inside of the Pfizer shots. You just need to know, all pregnant women, if you're pregnant with a female baby, there are two trimesters in which the female body's ovaries, inside your baby, will be creating all the eggs it will ever have for its whole life. The infertility that's going to be coming from this is not in this generation. Your babies are going to be born unable to have children of their own. So you're going to have babies, they're going to come out looking normal, and then when they go to be 18, 19, 20 years old, they're not going to have any eggs to actually get pregnant with, because these chemicals in these shots are known to be toxic to the developing eggs inside of the ovaries of females. So you're going to look back and go, you know what, it didn't cause any harm to my child. I got the vaccines when I was pregnant with you. At 10 years old, you're fine. 20 years old, you're fine. And then you go to get pregnant or try to have children, you never will be able to. This is a great attempt to try to sterilize and fertilize the world, it appears. But every pregnant woman should be warned that they should never take these shots. Outside of the miscarriages that are being reported within days of the shots, think about the baby inside.
It's bizarre. What is this about? It's never been about health. This is about genocide, isn't it?
That's what it appears to me. Genocide through infertilizing and sterilizing the world. And then, of course, there's been tons of deaths also. Yeah. It appears that there's been no respect for life or humanity at all for the individuals in putting this agenda in place and these mandates. But there's just two things that should be very disturbing to people, I think, especially those that are in America. We've been raised to trust this one agency to do its due diligence to approve things to be safe and effective medically. That's called the FDA. They do this FDA approval process. Why in the world has the world, why in the world has any American been okay with the fact that they mandated, the NIH did and Anthony Fauci did, they mandated a never FDA approved drug to be the only treatment for COVID? It has been FDA approved in October, but they already killed 500,000 people. But it was never FDA approved when the pandemic started, because the Ebola study proved it was not safe and effective, and the FDA was not going to approve it. Why then the next step, the next solution is a vaccine that's never been tried on humans before, and it's definitely never been FDA approved. Why in the world did we drop all common sense and respect for what we thought was an agency that was doing some kind of review on medical devices and drugs to determine if they're safe and effective? Why did we just throw that out the window and go, you know, we're going to trust you anyway to just throw anything you want at us? I don't understand it. Please use reason and logic. I think they've used every cultic tactic you can think of through the media to destroy your critical thinking and logic and reasoning and replace it with whatever they want you to do. They have used every successful cultic tactic, period.
Yeah, I agree.
I like common sense. Just use common sense every once in a while, people.
Yeah, but some people have lost the ability.
The swine flu vaccine killed 53 people and they took it off the market. That's great. You've already got 12,000 reported in bars. You've got this lady stating from the CMS that there's over 45,000. When's the onslaught going to stop? When are you going to go? This doesn't make sense anymore. It didn't make sense in the past. Why does it make sense now? It doesn't, unless you're evil.
Yeah. Zelenko agrees with us, by the way, Brian. At, it's at least a half a million. It's probably many more.
Maybe. I love
Zelenko. He's very outspoken, but so is his legal counterpart. I don't know if you've seen the video clip with Dr. Roger Hutchinson from. He's another colleague of yours, Dr. Roger Hutchinson from Canada. Have you seen the video clip? I mean, he doesn't mince words. He calls a spade a spade. I think we have to do this. There's no other way.
I just can't thank y'all enough for a platform to be able to educate and try to inspire and try to keep as many people safe as possible. I've seen most of your interviews, so thank you for the opportunity to share.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you for being here.
This was extremely, extremely important, and I think it's going to make waves. It's going to disturb a lot of people.
Good. They've been killing people knowingly from the beginning, and they should be disturbed.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Okay, Brian, despite everything, have a great weekend.
Thank you very much, and you guys have a great day. It's probably nighttime where you are, but enjoy your evening.
Okay, thanks. We'll be in touch, Brian. This is important, and we're going to follow up on this.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
I look forward to it. I do want to tell you, I want to tell you one more thing. So Dr. Ben Marble, the founder of MyFreeDoctor.com, said he would like you guys to be a part of that organization. Zelenko is in it. Peter McCullough is in it. Jay Sanchez, a Harvard attorney, is in it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of Nobel Prize, Peace Prize nominees, MDs, as a part of that group, and have asked me to be a part of that group. And when they heard I was going to be on your interview, they all were so excited and said, can you please invite them to be a part of our group or reach out to us?
Of course, we'll join. Of course, it's an honor. Okay.
Great, awesome. Well, we'll make sure we get everybody in touch. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, and take care. Bye-bye. Oh. Yeah.